Welcome to Reading the Grid with Aaron and Ina. Each week, we explore the stories behind books, movies, and shows that highlight the history of this dynamic sport. Buckle up for a fast-paced journey through Formula One. Now let's jump into it. Oscar Piastri claimed victory in a rain-delayed Belgian Grand Prix at Spa-Francorchamps, overtaking teammate Lando Norris and strengthening his lead in the Drivers' Championship.
The intro music for Sky broadcast of the race was swapped out for F1 movie theme. Regardless of how you feel about it, and for the record, I like the music, it does not affect you the same way, as I do not associate it with real-life racing, and the credits of the drivers' profiles do not hit the same beats of the music. I hope this was just an experiment and does not stay for the duration of the season.
I should have paid attention to that because I actually watched Sky this weekend instead of F1 TV. I did not catch it, so maybe I missed it because I have the rain delay.
I think it was before the formation lap. And it was so bizarre because I thought something was wrong with my TV. Like, the sound did not match the images. So I was like, where is the music? Where is the music that pumps you up for F1? And I realized, oh no, they totally changed it. And then I read that it was only for the Sky broadcast. F1 TV used the usual music, which made me think there's hope that it won't be permanent because it just did not work.
What really didn't work was the 80-minute delay due to heavy rain. The race began with a rolling start behind the safety car. Piastri made an early statement with a bold move through Eau Rouge and down the Kemmel Straight to take the lead from Norris, who had started on pole.
A new thing that we learned this weekend is that there is a three-hour block during which the F1 race has to take place. But the starting point of it became a point of contention. Even Ayo Komatsu, who is the team principal of Haas, had the wrong information as he assumes that it would be start tolling on the formation lap. And just to clarify, the formation lap happened before the 80-minute delay. What was verified during the broadcast was that the actual time would start when the first lap started, whether it's a standing, rolling, or a start behind a safety car.
That was a very interesting tidbit to learn. I also assumed it was with the formation lap, but I'm glad I was wrong, because if not, that would not have been a very long race.
Well, I just want to say you had the same knowledge as the team principal of Haas.
I mean, if anyone's looking for a new team principal, feel free to come calling.
It really should.
As the track began to dry, strategy did become crucial. Piastri opted for medium slick tires one lap earlier than Norris, whose decision to take hard tires and stay out an extra lap cost him valuable time. Piastri maintained control to secure the win, with Norris finishing second for McLaren 1-2.
Although you could argue that this strategic call was a deciding factor, there's also a possibility that the time Norris lost for staying out for one more lap on inters cost him more time, and that McLaren should have risked a double stack, meaning having both drivers come into the pits to change the tires on the same lap. Ultimately, Norris's hard tires performed remarkably well, but he still made at least three mistakes that cost him lost time that had nothing to do with timing of the pit stops or tires. Overtakes were hard to come by on this track, with a notable exception. And Piastri's overtake on Norris on the first lap after the rolling start was the decisive move that sealed his victory.
Yes, and this notable exception we will talk about in a second, right after, because Charles Leclerc completed the podium for Ferrari. And our notable exception, Lewis Hamilton, recovered from a pit lane start of 16th to finish 7th. The result extended Piastri's championship lead to 16 points over Norris and increased McLaren's gap over Ferrari in the constructors' standings.
This was also a sprint weekend, and the sprint race, as dull as it ultimately turned out to be, produced the most interesting happenstance with Pierre Gasly, who qualified in P6 for the sprint, did not start, but then joined the race two laps down only not to finish. I did not realize you can join a race after you already DNS, did not start, and also that you can DNS and DNF in the same race by the same driver. It was wild, and not enough explanation was offered to how it could happen. This is one of the reasons F1 is great. You learn something new every race. This is one race weekend where the F1 fans who keep up with qualifying sessions were rewarded. Both qualifying sessions were more exciting than the subsequent races with unexpected exits, which were heartbreaking as well, and heart-palpitating moments towards the end of each session where there was a surprise that nobody expected. For instance, Ocon's P5 in sprint qualifying and Albon's P5 in actual qualifying.
Oh, and I hate that that wasn't even showed. And yes, we can address the two shocking ones of being Lewis Hamilton getting not making it out of Q1 for the sprint or qualifying itself. Those are very heartbreaking. But this delayed start, which saw the possibility of a wet race evaporate, which wreaked havoc with those drivers like Max Verstappen, who set up their cars to race in the rain. Spark debate in the paddock with some drivers defending the caution due to Spa's treacherous layout in the wet, while others expressed frustration at the lack of traditional wet weather racing. The balance between safety and spectacle remains a key issue as F1 continues to evolve. With all of that being said, Ina won your heart at Spa.
So on Saturday, after the sprint, I was lining up to include Ocon, Behrman, maybe Hadjar in my choices, but their arcs went the opposite way in the race. And instead, Albon broke through with Lawson, Bartoletto, and even Gasly wooing me. But in terms of who won my heart, it has to be the Ferrari duo. I'm going to leave to you to wax poetic about Lewis, who had the best arc of having an atrocious Friday and Saturday turn into an overtake masterclass on Sunday. I will instead give it to Charles Leclerc. I was starting to despair that he will never see podium again after his disastrous drive at Silverstone, but he redeemed himself. He qualified in P4 for the sprint, which he admitted was the best that he believed he could do, and retained that position. We're not going to talk about how he overtook Lando Norris. And for four laps, I had hopium that he might get on the sprint podium, not to be because Lando eventually overtook him. But he kept the P4. I assume he would just repeat this performance in the race, but he exceeded my expectations by producing the last flying lap of qualifying that was 3/1000ths of a second quicker than Max Verstappen. I still did not believe that he could retain third, and neither could Max. But he proved me and Max wrong by not giving the place up during the interest phase, which was the most dangerous phase, I think, for him, and holding off Max once they switched to the slick tires. This time, Ferrari's strategy was on point with both drivers, and Leclerc got a podium that he may not have fully believed himself was a possibility. Aaron, do we really even need to ask who's won your heart?
No, because the individual won and broke. The whole weekend goes to Lewis after Friday and Saturday with sprint and the sprint race and qualifying. I thought, well, he just really doesn't want to live out my hopium fantasy of him getting second and being on the podium for Ferrari at this race. And then he completely redeemed himself on Sunday, having a very well-deserved driver of the day going from 16th to 7th. And I just kept waiting for him to get around Albon. Albon, kudos on the defending. It was driving me bananas. Had it been driving Lewis even crazier, but I was really proud of my driver.
Can I just correct you for 1 second? So,
Sure.
yes, he qualified P16, but he did have to start in the pit lane because he changed his setup after qualifying. However, he was not the only person to do that. So, in that case, what happens is you line up in the pit lane in the order that you qualified. So if two people in front of him, which is what happened, ha decided to also switch their setup or take new power units, it would delegate him lower. So he actually started P18th, and your favorite,
That's
Lance
what
Stroll,
I
started
thought.
P16th.
I saw 18 somewhere, and then I kept seeing
Yes.
16. I'm like, I swear it was 18.
He qualified P16, but he definitely started P18 because I did note where Lance Stroll started. Because I'm like, how does this person go from P20th to P16th without doing anything? Because people were taking power
Oh my
units or
gosh,
changing
the
the setup.
amount of people taking power. How many people started from the pit lane? Five?
Four.
Four? Five?
Four. And I think that was that matched the record.
That was
Yes.
wild to me.
Right. So this was even more impressive because he went from P18th to P7th. And what I think probably really pissed him off is the fact that we did not start in the wet race, because the way he was started going on inters when he overtook three cars in
I
one
know one lap.
lap, which is amazing. It was so precise, beautiful to watch. And I just could only imagine, if it was raining, what he could accomplish, because I feel like he would have kept going. Because for the first time ever, Ferrari actually executed a good strategy and he ended up in P7 after the tire change, because he changed, I believe, lap 11, but he was one of the first ones to change tires. And that, amazingly for Ferrari, turned out to be the correct call. Leclerc redeemed himself by actually performing better than expected, because even Max said, "Oh, like I thought I would overtake him on inters. Like it's Ferrari in the rain. Come on." Or at least not a dry track. And Leclerc was saying that I thought he would overtake me because we don't do well with anything wet on the ground. First of all, Spa apparently is very hard to overtake. Don't tell that to Lewis in the rain. But so it's hard to overtake. And I do think Leclerc showed skill. And actually, it was interesting how many people started reminiscing about 2022 when, for at least a brief glimmer of a season, he and Max were going at it for the championship. People were saying that those battles were the most satisfying because they both respect each other and Max knows he shouldn't push him. So they can actually race and make it exciting without crashing into each other.
So, who broke your heart this weekend?
On Saturday, after the sprint, I would have had Albon and Gasly as my biggest losers. Remember, Gasly was the one who DNS and DNF in the sprint after qualifying in sixth place. But they both acquitted themselves well in the race, and Albon was really stellar. Instead, I will have to go with Kimi Antonelli. He has been breaking my heart a lot lately, and seeing him teary-eyed when talking to reporters after being out in Q1, which has repeated his performance from the sprint. And in the sprint, it was even worse because he made a mistake that cost his teammate George Russell damage, and he couldn't proceed beyond Q2, which he also repeated again in qualifying. So this weekend was like pouring salt in the wound. I thought it was very sweet that fellow drivers came together to offer him support, especially with Lewis Hamilton stepping up to not just comfort him in the Mercedes motorhome before the race, but also supporting him after the race when they were waiting to be weighed. I also saw a cute video of Kimi and Lando Norris walking off the truck for the driver's parade with Lando hugging him.
I didn't
It
see that, but that sounds so nice of Lando.
Absolutely. And I think it would have meant a lot to Kimi because he was saying he was having issues with confidence. And that is something that we know Lando struggles with. So Lando would be the best person to commiserate with that issue.
Definitely. Oh, I did see something where someone was questioning, did Toto push his protege in to F1 too fast?
He probably did. So I actually understand that Kimi is a rookie and he's still just 18. And the pressure on him is enormous because he's being compared to Max Verstappen, who did get into to F1 at 17, but not in a Red Bull. Like he was given a sister team to get acclimated and get ready. Oh, with Kimi, was just plopped into Mercedes, replacing Lewis Hamilton.
Those are impossible shoes to fill.
The expectations were not realistic. What's concerning to me is that what we noted several races ago, that he's just not fast and he's way off Russell's pace. I think the team should work more with him to build his confidence. And I think they must be doing something because every time they show him with Bono, I feel like there's a good synergy there. And Bono just seems like a warm person. So I'm sure he provides as much encouragement as he possibly can. Nico Rosberg, who was a guest on Sky broadcast, and I just want to say, can he be a permanent guest? Because he's a gift. But anyway, he suggested that Mercedes should finalize Kimi's contract for next year, and that's going to give him confidence. I can't agree with that and want to remind him that Sergio Perez had a contract with Red Bull for 2025 and 2026, as far as I remember. And that did not help his confidence because his results did not get better once the contract was announced. And he ended up without a seat for 2025. So I'm not sure this is a cure-all that Kimi needs, but maybe there's more that the team can do.
For
And
sure. I could see the argument of having a contract would give you security in knowing where you stand with the team. And I'm sure all the rumors in the past couple weeks about Max have not helped anybody's mindset, including George Russell, even though it does appear that you are correct. He probably will not be moving in 2026.
thank you for acknowledging. I wasn't sure how long your delusion was going to last, so
Oh,
it
I
seemed
mean,
to
he's
have come
still
down.
leaving Red Bull, but I'm
Yeah,
settling down on the 2026.
I was going to say, we never argued about that. It's just
I know.
2026.
I was pretty convinced it was going to be this year.
Fair. So Russell also mentioned that the direction there, I don't know if they call them the upgrades or something that they did to the car since Canada, that direction was wrong. And they have to go back to the drawing board and maybe undo everything they have done since then. And this should definitely benefit Kimi as well because George is not setting the world on fire. However, maybe Mercedes should hire Kimi a sports psychologist if he doesn't have one already, as Nico Rosberg benefited from having one. And he's constantly suggesting that Lando Norris should have one. So I think Kimi definitely could use one.
Oh, I think that's a great idea for Lando and for Kimi.
Well, Nico was saying, again, gift. The man is a gift. He
Oh, his
was.
interviews were phenomenal. I love his directness and his line of questioning.
Right. Well, we'll get. There's a whole section of words of wisdom. We can rename Nico's wisdom. But in any case, yes. So Nico Rosberg was saying that he actually criticized Lando Norris for talking about mental health, because he felt that the more he talks about it, the more he shows his weakness. But in the same breath, because nobody accused Rosberg of not being a hypocrite, he's talking about how he benefited from having a sports psychologist. I guess it's just good to have one and not talk about it.
All right. We talked a little bit about Ferrari and gave them some kudos on their strategy execution. Any other Ferrari comments?
Yes, so they did not have the quickest pit stops. They barely made it into the top 10 with Leclerc's 2.6 second stop, which I think is a little too long. But Aaron, do you know which team had the fastest stop, and more importantly, with which driver?
I actually do not. Usually I pay attention. This weekend I missed it, but I'm gonna go with Sauber and Bortoleto.
Excellent guess, and I think they were in the top 10, but now it was Red Bull with Tsunoda.
What?
Thank you. That's the reaction I expect.
Okay, well, I have to tell you. Christian Horner leaving Red Bull seems to be the greatest thing that ever happened for Yuki Tsunoda. He finally got parts to his car and confidence and qualifying and all sorts of things. It was like a whole new Yuki this weekend until the end of the race.
Right. So unfortunately, so Lauren Mekies, the former team principal of Racing Bulls, Tsunoda's former team that he started the year with, is now team principal of Red Bull, replacing Christian Horner. And he revealed that apparently All the upgraded parts since Imola have been kept in reserve for Max and have not been given to Yuki Tsunoda. So Yuki finally received, at least he received the new floor. I don't think he received all of them, but he received some of the upgrades, and that resulted in him in qualifying in top 10, which was an improvement, a huge improvement from his previous qualifying attempts for Red Bull. But then I think Racing Bull's strategy invaded the Red Bull team because he really lost out on the points because of strategy. And Lauren Mekies again apologized after the race that it was really the strategy that failed Yuki this time.
I think the fact that you have someone who's actually willing to apologize and own it, I feel like that's a page out of the James Vowles playbook. He seems to do a debrief and take ownership after each Grand Prix when things don't go well. So kudos.
I think no, it's definitely a good sign. I just wish, like, again, Red Bull used to be great at
And
strategy.
then they lost everybody.
No, the head of strategy is still Hannah Schmidt, and she's been there since all of Max's wins. So I don't know what happened. Is she only calling Max's strategy, which also has not always been the greatest this year? But yeah, I just hope, you know, again, Laurent Mekies came from Ferrari, so I hope it's not Ferrari infecting Red Bull strategy.
It was one race. Let's see what happens if there's a pattern. But hopefully not. If we're going to read the rest of the grid and guessed, I personally guess Sauber was quickest because Jonathan Wheatley, we talk about what an operations guru he is, and he's over there and with Hulk coming off his first podium. So, and Bortoleto made Q3. I was shocked.
Well, he made it in both sprint
I
and
know. It was
qualifying.
wild. He had a great weekend.
Yes, and surprisingly, Hülkenberg was also looking to be getting points, and then they decided to switch his tires again on a track where track position was key. And I just want to say I did not mention it during my break my heart, and nothing really. This driver did not break my heart. It's more like my heart broke for him. So it's George Russell. And the fact that, did you notice that everyone in the top 10 did a one-stop strategy? Now you know who they have to thank. Poor George Russell, who did it last year and got disqualified because his car was not set up for a one-stop strategy.
No, it was he underweight or his tire
He
like
underweight.
something was
No, it was
underweight?
underweight.
But like
Yeah.
by the
It's
tiniest,
yeah, it was
I know it.
heartbreaking. But I'm just saying he must have been livid this year. He's like, really, really, I show you how and you all follow my lead and I can't even get to the podium. Thank you.
No, I thought for sure he was going to have a bit more redemption this year.
I put him on pole. And well, for the sprint, you put him for
And
the race.
I had him for the race. You had him on podium. I mean,
Yeah, hopium.
no, he didn't come anywhere to where we thought he would.
Yeah. But the one thing about Bortoleto is that he asked his team to switch positions with Hülkenberg when Hülkenberg was ahead of him because they were chasing Lawson and he claimed he could overtake Lawson. Spoiler alert, he couldn't. So how do you feel about that decision?
Yeah, that's a pretty bold ask.
I mean, I'm glad that the team listened. Hülkenberg did not take it in a bad way at all, but I think he mentioned that there was issues maybe with the car and for the reason why his tires were going off, why it necessitated the second pit stop. But I feel he should have just kept it on the track and see what happens. Worst comes to worst, Gasly overtakes him and he's
Right.
not in P10, which he wouldn't have been anyway.
Our dear friends at Haas and our team principals that are also learning the rules of rain clock times.
Well, maybe we can give him a little break. I want to say it's kind of interesting that we remember what you said about Bearman. So he went to Wimbledon along with Russell. Did not work out for him. But Bearman and Lawson, we'll get to Lawson later, but they've all went to Wimbledon. And you said, well, either in the sprint or in the race, he should be in the top 10. He's not going to thank you because he did make it. He and Ocon made it into the top 10 the top eight, because top eight only get points in the sprint. So they both made it into top into the points and the sprint. Amazing. Then the actual qualifying happened. He did not get out of Q2, and he finished for his fourth P11th of the season, which gotta be so frustrating. And he was
Yes.
frustrated in the interview. I mean, he claimed he had an issue with the car, so it was not all on him, but I just think what could have been.
Well, there was a lot of talk before the race about their rear wing setup and how different Ocon and Bierman's wings were.
Well, Ocon was set for dry race
Right.
and Bierman set for rain. How come they both ended outside the points?
I don't know. I really don't.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get on later, but somebody else was very frustrated that he set up for the rain, and because of 80-minute delay, it did not turn into a wet race. But maybe if it did, Berman could have gotten the 10th. We never know.
Williams.
Well, apparently we can only have one Williams do well in the race. In the sprint, it was Sainz, who qualified 6th, finished 6th. In the race, it was Albon, qualified 5th, finished 6th. I want to need to ask you, was it endearing or delusional that Albon was upset that Russell passed him and Albon could not get him back? I mean, he managed to hold off Lewis in a Ferrari. It may have given Albon a false sense of confidence that Mercedes, which objectively could have been the fourth best car in the grid, but is still faster than Williams, that it would be easier to overtake them.
I do wish in qualifying they would have showed Albon his last lap. I wish they showed it. You didn't see it on TV.
No.
I don't know what was going on with the camera crews, but it wasn't on F1 and it wasn't on Sky. So,
It's they're using the same feed, so technically you see the same thing.
well, yeah. I don't know. I don't think he was going to overtake Russell. I just don't see that happening. And I like
No.
Alex Albon. I thought he had a phenomenal race. I know he's had some of his better performances. Yeah, I just didn't see him doing that one.
Correct. I agree. So I think it is delusional of him to think that he could have.
Agreed. There's really not much to say about Aston Martin. Both were horrific for Stroll and Alonso, and Stroll finished ahead of Alonso.
I mean, at that point, remember he was promoted to P16 because everyone went to the pit lane, and one of
Yeah.
them was Alonso. But because he qualified so poorly, he was the last in the pit lane, so it was already an insurmountable mountain to overcome. I don't know if you've seen their post-race interviews. Well, Stroll says the same thing, like, we just didn't have the car. This is the best we could do. And Alonso was, well, this track is not made for a car, so technically same thing. So that was very enlightening and insightful, and everything we need to hear about Aston Martin.
Yeah, pretty much. And Racing Bulls, I'm going to talk about Hadjar or Lawson a
Well,
little bit
should
more.
I leave Lawson to you? Because I don't know if he did enough to woo you, but Hadjar, I think you would be probably not like the fact that he was great in qualifying, but his race was a
Oh,
disaster.
his race was
Eh.
terrible. He made me so sad. I need him to get out of this
Well,
little rookie dip that he's in.
I think his this, I don't know. Overall, maybe it's a dip, but this time it was his car. At least he qualified well. Kimi Antonelli has nothing to show for his weekend. So at least Hadjar can say, well, I qualified in the top 10 in my, in the car. I mean, that was capable of scoring points because Lawson did. But I think it's too soon to say how bad his slump is. Let's just say that.
I just keep thinking that we jinxed him.
All right, well, do you want to jinx Lawson?
No, I'm gonna try to be a little more objective when it comes to Lawson because I have not done a very good job so far. And he had a pretty decent weekend.
Okay.
Decent, great. I'll give him great.
Listen, he should probably enjoy it because I don't know what's going to happen next race,
Was this the
but
first time he made it to Q3 or
I
second?
think second.
Second, right? Okay.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I mean, he got points. He had a, not wooing.
He went to Wimbledon. Come
I know. There
on.
is just something about him.
I get it. Well, so we're back with our words of wisdom segment, which is where we highlight interesting quotes that we overheard in the radio, in the media, or during the broadcast that stood out for inside depth or controversial sentiment. With Christian Horner's departure, this section feels a little dry, since he could be occasionally witty and always infuriating. However, this weekend still produced some nuggets, including one from Christian himself, who obviously could not let any opportunity pass without saying something. So Christian Horner on Instagram posted a picture of him riding a horse and capturing it as different horsepower this Sunday. Aaron, thoughts?
I give him credit for being able to poke fun at himself at such a short period from the announcement. So kudos to Christian, even though technically he's still an employee of Red Bull through 2030. However, I thought that was, that was witty.
See, I'm telling you. Well, I just want to say that Sky interviewed Mattia Binotto, and who's, as we all know, not my favorite.
Not your favorite.
Right. So he's now associated with Sauber, former team principal of Ferrari. The less said about this time, the better. And he acknowledged that he missed Christian Horner.
Oh.
And then Nico Rosberg made a comment that he wonders if Toto or Zak Brown missed him as well. And that created a whole conversation among David Croft and Martin Brundle with Nico. I mean, went down a different rabbit hole that we're just not going to touch right now. But I just thought, what do you think, Aaron? Does Toto miss Christian?
I think in some ways they probably will miss each other because I think they like sparring with each other. They could trade the jabs. Like they could each take it and hang with it. And, do we
They
have the
produce
emails
gems.
to prove it?
Yeah.
Maybe.
They produce gems. They
They did.
definitely produce
They did.
gems.
Well, even Toto said in an interview that he's not going to say anything bad in case Horner pops up in FIA. It would make his life shit.
Awesome. So, speaking of Horner, we're not done because he was a topic of conversation. So, again, Nico Rosberg delightfully does not mind asking the hard questions. So this was his exchange with our least favorite father on the grid, Jos Verstappen, Max's dad. So Nico asked, last year you said Horner needs to go. And Jos said, it's different. I have nothing to say. It's fine. And then Nico said, now you're quiet. You're quiet now. And Jos said, I'm always quiet. I just thought that was hilarious because you can cut the tension with a knife. And I give Nico props for going there. I obviously did not expect anything less from Jos, but I just thought that was like a tasteful little nugget.
It was a good one. My favorite Nico question was actually to Valtteri Bottas when he asked him about the Cadillac contract, and he's like, "Oh, I'm sorry, I can't hear you."
No, that was good. I think Walter gave him as good as he got. And but again, Nico went there.
Nico asked the hard-hitting questions, which I love.
Yeah. So the last quote that I want to mention is what Max Verstappen said after the race. And this is what we talked about. Somebody was not happy. We didn't have a wet race. We put on a wing for the rain, but in the end, we barely drove in the rain. So that was worthless. It was all very safe. The decisions were too careful, which is disappointing. I agree. It was disappointing for him because I think in the rain, he totally overtakes Leclerc and at least third. But I'm glad I wasn't in the rain. And I actually think the decision that I thought was mind-boggling is the four laps we had to do behind safety cars, which is at least two too many, and why we didn't have a standing start. And it was very funny because there are a lot of memes about how like F1 was trying everything to line it up for Lando to be first because they did the rolling start because he had issues with standing starts, and yet Oscar Piastri still overtook him. And Lando kept, and so there's also a conspiracy theory that Lando was on the radio saying, "Hey, the right side of the track is very wet," meaning like his, if they were doing a standing start, then that's the side he was going to be lining up on.
Right.
But I think he has a point because we saw it in the sprint where Max overtook Oscar Piastri, who was on pole on the first lap.
Right.
And then we saw the same thing happen in the race where
In the
Oscar
race.
overtook Lando, even though it was a rolling start. So there's something to be said that the pole position is not the ultimate, or
The
not the
pole.
ultimate, not the most beneficial position you can
Right.
have at Spa.
I would agree with you. I do not understand why they didn't get a couple laps in and then either red flag it when the heavy rain came down.
Well,
So,
then
I
the
mean,
3-hour block would start.
I guess I don't know. That was a really long delay. We've had delays at Monaco and other races, but nothing quite like this in my memory. In the
Well,
4 years that I've been watching the live races.
what I one of the theory I saw was that because it's in the forest, it's an Ardennes forest, the track, it doesn't dry as quickly as in other tracks. But on the other hand, why does it have to be that dry? Like, I get it that initially when they did the formation lap, they realized the visibility was insane because everyone was complaining that they couldn't see anything. And that is super dangerous, especially on this track. But I think the rain stopped at least 30 minutes before they started the race. So
Right.
they could have definitely, especially if they're going to do 4 laps around the safety car, they might as well start early.
I agree. I did hear something about how the rain holds and the leaves on the trees, which then makes its own mess. I understand the FIA and the race director being in charge of the driver's safety, and that is a lot. These are the most talented drivers in the world, and I know no one likes to drive in a race with no visibility, but I do believe they could have started a little bit earlier than they did.
Well, I don't think they had to wait that long to have the visibility be ideal. I also think they have wet tires.
Right.
Why can't they mandate that? Because they can. They can mandate wet tires. Oh, I found another thing that I learned. Apparently, not only do they not use tire blankets to keep the heat on the wet tires, they cannot. They're literally forbidden for using tire blankets for the wet tires.
Is that why Brundle, the four tires were outside? Oh,
And they
I
were
missed.
not covered.
Yeah, I missed that.
Yeah, that I thought was an interesting nugget. So I'm thinking they can mandate everyone put on wet tires and we can start the race. How about
Right.
that? I know nobody likes those tires, but if everyone on the same tire, you kind
It's a
of
level
level the
playing
play.
field. Yes.
Exactly.
I don't know. I get the caution. I thought they were a little bit too cautious.
I
Now, I
agree.
say that, and then God forbid there was some catastrophic crash. And I get the sensitivity to it because Anthony Hubert's mom was there watching the race with Pierre Gasly's mom. And what was it, 2019
2019.
is when he was killed on that track. So I understand the extra caution. I agree with you. I don't think they had to wait as long as they did to get it started.
Yeah, and by the way, I thought it took a lot of strength from her to get back to this track.
I
So that
agree.
must be devastating.
That would have to be pretty painful. I do appreciate all the posts on Gasly, how he pays respects to his friend every year. I thought that's very sweet.
It definitely is, which is why I wanted his weekend to turn around because after the DNS and DNF, I'm like, can he like get a break? Because at this point, it's
I know, he definitely
ridiculous.
he deserved one for sure.
Yeah. Both the sprint and the main races turned out to be duds, but the qualifying sessions for both races produced a lot of drama, chaos, and unexpected surprises. The controversy about racing in the wet will continue throughout the year as the FIA, F1, and the teams grapple with finding the right balance of allowing exciting wet races but preserving the safety of the drivers. I just hope they sort it out for Brazil because, as we have said time and again, Brazil always delivers, and wet racing is partly what makes it great.
This is so true. Next week, we have the Hungarian Grand Prix, and it is your turn to go first for who you have on pole and P3.
This is going to be tough because I don't want to have the recency bias of just choosing whoever was on the podium last year, last race, or achieved it. But I do feel that it will be again a strong track for McLaren. So I'm going to go with Lando Norris on pole.
All right. Who are you putting P3?
Could I get back to you after you tell me who you pull on pole?
Sure. All right. You have Lando on pole. I will put Oscar on pole.
Okay. And then for my P3, this is tough. You know, I want to say Charles Leclerc, but I don't feel it. Definitely not Russell. If the car has issues, it's not going to be solved by Hungary. I'm going to go with Max Verstappen.
You're not going to attempt a Hülkenberg, Stroll, or Lewis Hamilton.
Now, Max loved this track. And I just, by the way, last year's race, the only thing that was exciting about it was, of course, the snafu that McLaren did with pitting the wrong driver first, but because it is hard to overtake, but also the blunders that Red Bull produce, including in Max's rants on the radio. And if we can hear those rants, he can be in P3 because those were very entertaining.
Max does have good radio messages. I am actually going to continue on the redemption arc of Lewis Hamilton. And at some point this year, I will get it correct when the man ends up on a podium in Ferrari. So I'm going to put Hamilton at P3.
I love that hopium
Yes, I am going to roll with that hopium. And for P2, I'm actually going to put Oscar Piastri.
for you. Okay. Then thank you for doing that because
You're
then
welcome.
I can preserve my P2, which is Lando Norris.
All right. And who do you have winning the Hungarian Grand Prix?
Oscar Piastri. He's going to do what he did last time, which is overtake Lando and keep it going. And this time there's not going to be any snafus on the pit stops.
Okay. Well, I'm going to give it to Lando because he'll be getting back this week for not
Well,
converting. Pull.
listen, he should not have won Silverstone. So that was his
Fair, totally
back.
fair.
So I don't know. I think they're even going in, so we'll see who has the upper hand. But yeah, again, unfortunately, not putting McLaren 1-2, just not going to get us anywhere because this is just like I don't
No.
see within a week things changing so much.
No, I am gonna spice it up in Brazil, though.
Oh, Brazil will have Ocon on the podium no matter what.
I might put Stroll on there. You never know. Might
Oh
get
my,
crazy.
can you imagine Ocon, Stroll, Hülkenberg? Lock it
I mean, you could really even put like Bierman on there and get a little wild.
I would love that for him. I
Just don't see it happening.
just don't see. I mean, look, yes, Ocon and Gasly were on the podium last year,
They were. Didn't see that happening either.
but I
I don't
just,
even think they did until the fact that they got on the podium.
but that was, yeah, that was insane.
That was wild.
So you put Lewis Hamilton as number three. Where do you put Leclerc?
Four. I'm going to put Leclerc at four. He'll be right outside the podium.
Well, I'm going to match you. So
Okay.
Leclerc is definitely four,
Okay.
and Lewis Hamilton fifth. I know I've been predicting him fifth, and unfortunately, I think because Hungary is also going to be hard to overtake, it's all going to depend on
Qualifying.
where they qualify. And I just don't see Lewis qualifying higher than Leclerc.
I don't know.
And
He's done it before. If he would have qualified higher than him this time, they would have been split even for where they qualified this year.
fair, but I don't see it. So for next week. And
I
I
do.
think, okay, well, he said himself he's still coming to grips with his new breaks, which
Yeah.
LeClaire already got a hot handle on. So I don't know if a week will be enough for him to have that handle. But in any case, and LeClaire said fourth is the best he can do. And I take him at his word. So I think this race, he just outperformed himself. And I just don't see it happening twice in a row. But I would love it. I would love it. I would love any of them to get on the podium. So don't get me wrong. That would be great. I just don't see it.
Well, I guess we will find out in less than a week's time, Ina. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to hit that subscribe button so you never miss an update.
But I'd also love to hear from you, whether it's your thoughts on today's episode, your suggestions for F1 books, shows, or movies to explore, or a shout out to Horner Witticism, heir apparent. Connect with us on Instagram, YouTube, or X, or drop us an email at readingthegrid@gmail.com. We want your ideas to fuel this podcast, so don't be shy.
Thanks for joining us on Reading the Grid. Keep your engines running and your pages turning. Until next time.